I'd like now to welcome to the program Russell Thurston. He is an encaustic artist, and he has a show that is opening tomorrow at Vivo Contemporary at 725 Canyon Road. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
So encaustic, that is a medium that I am going to guess most of our listeners have not heard of, or even if they have, they don't know what it is.
Well, the word encaustic is Greek, and it means to burn in. And the ancient Greeks and the Egyptians were the first to start using encaustic, and it's basically beeswax and damar resin. And what the Egyptians started doing was funerary masks. There's a very famous series of paintings called the Fayoum portraits, where they painted the portrait of the person that was mummified and attached it to the outside of the mummy. And then the Greeks used it. They would coat their ships with it to waterproof the wood hull. And then they started painting elaborate designs on the ships with it. So it dates back thousands of years. I think the earliest painting that they found was about 100 AD.
You make this stuff yourself. So you take beeswax and resin, you melt it over a griddle.
Right.
You add pigment.
Of course, the Egyptians didn't have electric pancake griddles, but I use a portable electric griddle and some old muffin tins, and I mix up the damar resin and the beeswax, and you can either put in oil sticks or oil paints or dry pigments to get the color.
And so once you do that, you've got a molten medium that as soon as you paint it on, it dries.
Right. The working time is really short. When you use it, a bristle brush, you have to use a natural bristle brush because the nylon brushes and sable brushes and the expansion brushes don't hold up to the heat.
So they'll just melt in the muffin
tin. The little hairs just fall apart. So I just buy really cheap bristle brushes from the hardware store and use them. But when you take the brush out of the hot liquid encaustic medium and apply it, you only have about 10 or 15 seconds of working time. So you can either work really quickly or just work in very small little brush strokes. But there are companies now, because of the popularity of encaustic, are companies like R&F and Encausticos that make special tools that allow you to have a longer working time. Bristles, brushes that have brass bristles that you can screw into a heat tool, and various tips that you can change. So it allows you to have a little more working time, a little more flexibility.
It's so interesting that people are working in these really ancient media that are basically materials found. If all of society evaporated, you could still do this stuff. You'd still have access to resin, beeswax,
right,
and pigments.
Well, that's when I was an illustrator and a photographer, I was using Photoshop and computer and all these very high-tech devices to create my work. And I think that one of the primary things that attracted me to encaustic was this notion of getting rid of all that technical stuff and just going back to this pure form of making a mark and doing artwork with it. And once you see the paintings, the surface quality is so luscious and seductive that it's just a wonderful medium to work in. But you're right, I think it's very analog, as opposed to high tech. I mean, there are some contemporary artists that do very high tech things with it, but I think basically it's just a very primitive medium to work in.
When I first started doing this show many years ago, I had an artist, a Native American potter, who talked about responding to the clay and being receptive to the clay and having the clay teach you as opposed to trying to master it and get it to do what you want it to do. He said that never worked. You had to really it was almost like a relationship. And when I was looking at your work yesterday, I just thought, I bet there's something like that going on with it.
You're absolutely right. In fact, when I first started using encaustic, I was really frustrated. And I think most artists that will attempt to use the medium, it's a pretty steep learning curve because it doesn't react like oil or acrylic because of the heat. So the medium tends to sort of push you in different ways of working. I like to say that it's like a journey without a map. I'm never quite sure where the painting's going to end up. But that's another thing I really love about it, that there's a spontaneity and a way to work with the material that is wonderful in that you can build up the surface and then you can scratch back down into the surface and reveal things underneath. I like to kind of say it's an archaeology of painting when you look at the work.
Well, you can build up and then scratch away or right. melt away things right. that are already there.
Right, and you have to, I mean, I've been doing it now for about 10 years, and you have to kind of know how much you're going to be able to see after you put 3 or 4 or 5, 10 layers of the medium on there. Some of that stuff underneath is completely opaque, and you can't see it anymore, but I still know it's there, which is kind of fun, so.
You are in a show that we talked about a little bit earlier in the year called Mining the Unconscious. You have a triptych mm-hmm. in that show called The Fountain, which is an encaustic work. And I think in the way that you describe the process, there's a lot of, it seems like there's a lot of room for your unconscious mind to do its work, for things right. to be hidden, to be revealed,
right.
and for discoveries to be made.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, when you look at some of the very famous encaustic painters, obviously, I guess the most famous is Jasper Johns. You know, everybody was always looking at his paintings, trying to figure out the puzzle, the riddle, because his work's very mysterious and seems to come directly from his subconscious. Plus, he never talks about his, you know, his work, so it makes it even harder to understand. But I think the medium lends itself to that. It's very tactile. I mean, you can sculpt with it. That piece that you're referring to, The Fountain, it's a very three-dimensional sculptural piece, and I love the way that you can use the medium to build up these forms. It doesn't have to be flat like a most traditional painting. You can really become more sculptural with it, which is great. So,
does the encaustic medium suggest subjects? Because I noticed when I was going through one of the books of your work that there's so many different kinds of things. There's flowers, there's star patterns, there's dinosaurs, there's faces, there's spines that look like snakes. I mean, literally spines made of bone in which you have incorporated actual bone found in the desert kind of thing. But how do you come up with the subjects of your paintings, which are all one, it's not, they're not just abstract works, they are all figures of one kind or another.
Boy, that's a tough one. I think I'm just drawn to those subjects, nature and science, technology. I don't know that encaustic, the medium itself, makes those subjects more prominent or but I there seems to be a tendency for a lot of encaustic artists, and this is interesting because I went to a conference in Boston, and there was sort of this discussion between the East Coast and the West Coast artists that work in encaustic, that the West Coast, the Southwest, is a lot more nature, painterly, outdoor, because of the quality of light here, and I think it maybe holds true for a lot of the artists that work out here. And the painters that work in the East Coast are more internal. You know, their work is, whether it's abstract or not, it seems to be more about their internal struggles and things that are going on. And I think maybe being in a big city, that must have
you don't really want to go outdoors if you
live. Yeah, right. But, you know, Leonard Cohen had a great quote. He said, if I knew where the ideas came from, I'd go there a lot more often.
Yeah, right. Now, there is an Encaustic Institute, and you give classes and workshops and things like that.
Right. We started that. There was a group of encaustic artists that got together about, 3 or 4 years ago called New Mexico Wax. And it gradually grew into the Encaustic Art Institute with the help of Douglas Marin, who has a studio right on Highway 14 out near Cerrillos. And he decided to donate this pyramid studio that he has and make it a nonprofit. And we have shows. In fact, there's an opening on Saturday. It's the third part of the Mining the Unconscious show, and it's all in caustic art. And we have workshops and lectures, visiting artists, and it's great.
And people can even learn to do this technique themselves
exactly,
if they choose to.
Exactly, yeah. And I'm going to do a demonstration of the medium on Saturday the 13th, I think, is next. Is that the 13th? Next
right.
Saturday? At Vivo Gallery, if somebody wants to come by and just see a little bit about the encaustic medium, they're welcome to come by. It's free, and it'll start at noon.
Meanwhile, the opening is this Friday, the 3rd of August. The show runs through August 24th. Russell Thurston is an encaustic artist, and his show is called Earthly Delights. And Anne Laser is the other artist
yes.
who will be there, and she's got a bunch of works as well. Vivo Gallery, 725 Canyon Road at vivocontemporary.com. Now, what is the website for the Encaustic Art Institute? Or they can just Google it, I suppose.
Yeah, it's just the initials. It's E-A-I-N-M, Encaustic Art Institute, New Mexico. So just type E-A-I-N-M.com.
Russell Thurston, thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.